Booster.
Go.
Retro.
Go.
Vital.
We're go fly.
Guidance.
Guidance go.
Procedures.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in space flight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
And good afternoon, everyone, from Florida's Space Coast, home of the most skilled aerospace workforce in America. I'm Jim Behnke, and this is the August 7th, 2010 edition of Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. Innovation you can trust, performance you can count on. Well, on today's show, we have three stars of the space program who spent their careers here in Florida, and who this week will be honored with Lifetime Achievement Awards from the National Space Club Florida Committee. John Conway, Tim Hanrahan, and Warren Lackey will join me in the studio today to tell their stories and perhaps a few secrets about working in the space program. Maybe not. And if you'd like to maybe answer your questions to them as well, all you have to do is pick up the phone and dial 321-768-1240 from anywhere in the nation. Of course, Space Coast area wireless customers can punch in star 1240 on their cell phones and make a free phone call to the studio. Or if you prefer, send us an email to spacetalking@aol.com. Well, we're going to get to our guests in just a minute or so, but first let's quickly update you on what's going on in space today and during the past, at least past week or so. Right now on board the International Space Station and actually outside of it, Space Station astronauts Doug Wheelock and Tracy Caldwell Dyson are in the midst of a spacewalk to fix a faulty coolant pump, a problem that came up earlier in the week and was serious enough that NASA quickly put in place a spacewalk to make repairs for the pump. Spacewalk initially set for Friday and then was moved to this morning to give everyone a little bit more time to prepare. Now, the duo, Wheelock and Caldwell Dyson, have been outside since, I guess, the EVA officially started at 7:19 this morning. It is still underway right now. They did have some problems removing some ammonia coolant lines from the pump. One of the lines just would not budge free. They wound up removing a couple other lines, and that wound up reducing the pressure in the system somewhat. And that last bulky line did break free. But unfortunately, as they connected to sort of a spare connecting box, there was a leak in one of the lines. And they think they've stopped the leak now, but it did leak for about 20 minutes or so. And ammonia in space quickly becomes snowflakes, and it kind of bounces all over the suit. It's a real mess. And, of course, that's hazardous material. You don't want that inside your airlock or inside your breathing area. So what the astronauts have to do is basically bake it out. They have to basically just sit there and take a sun bath, and the sun actually kind of bakes it away, dries it away, if you will. And once they've done that, they should be able to head back inside. So it's unclear as to whether or not everything is working as it should be right now. They're still worried about the leaking line and still concerned about making sure the astronauts are safe to come back inside. A second spacewalk is possible, and we'll just have to wait and see how that plays out. Other space news this past week, anything that really signaled progress in clearing up our plans for the future of our space exploration here in the nation. The full Senate passed NASA's authorization bill with the plan that keeps the shuttle flying at least one more mission, supports space station operations through 2020, continues developing the Orion spacecraft, a brand new heavy lift launch vehicle, but also does cut back somewhat on support for commercial space development and technology development. The full Senate has yet to vote to give NASA its actual money that it needs. And in the meantime, the House has yet to complete its side of the deal. And once they do, the House and Senate committee has to get back together again, reconcile their differences, and put the whole thing through another round of votes. So it could take several more weeks, if not months, before we finally learn the ultimate outcome of this situation. While all that was going on, the Secretary of Commerce for the Commerce Department visited the KSC this week, the Space Center this week, talked to some workers about what they might do to help deal with the layoffs that are coming up. No decisions yet on what's going to happen there. At the same time this week, an Ariane 5 rocket launched two satellites from French Guiana in South America here at the Cape. The payload for the next Atlas V rocket launch was installed atop a rocket, and a Delta IV Heavy was moved out to Complex 37. And so launch operations continues to go right as it should here at the Cape, even as we try to continue to figure out where we're going in the future. Kind of went through that fast because we do have a lot to get to today, and let's see if we can't introduce our guests in the studio before we take our first break. Our guests represent the 2010 class of Lifetime Achievement Award winners as bestowed by the National Space Club Florida Committee. We'll talk about the group in a minute. But first up in the studio today, working left to right on your radio dial, to my left, John Conway. He spent 34 years with NASA and retired in 1996 as Director of Payload Processing at the Kennedy Space Center. Since then, he has remained active in the space community as an industry consultant. And, John, it's great to see you again and have you on the show. Welcome, sir.
Great to be here, Jim.
Well, good. And sitting next to John here is Tim Hanrahan. His career spans nearly 40 years, initially with the U.S. Army at White Sands in New Mexico. And then he quickly decided that the tropical was nicer than desert. And spent the last 33 years in his career with the Aerospace Corporation here at the Cape before retiring in 1996. Tim, welcome, and thanks for being here today as well.
Well, thank you, Jim, and it's great to be here, but I got to say, hey, I'm still a native Texan at heart.
Native Texan at heart. Well, that's good. That's good. And connection to Minnesota as well, which we can we have.
That's
an
right. Wife Pat is from Minnesota.
And that's great. As we all know, I'm born and raised. Finally, sitting at on my right at microphone number 4, Warren Lackey joins us. He was with NASA for 32 years, retired in 1997, and became an independent consultant until joining ASRC Aerospace in 2006. In addition, he's also well-known around the community for being active in the Space Walk of Fame activity in Titusville. And again, speaking of Minnesota, I learned that we have some small world connections with him there. And, of course, all of that gives me an excuse later in the day to talk about the Vikings and Brett Favre. So, Warren, it's a pleasure to have you join us today.
Thank you very much, Jim. It's a pleasure to be here.
Good, good. Well, as expected, we're going to come up here against our first break. Let me first tell you that the National Space Club Florida Committee is a nonprofit organization located here on the Space Coast. It's dedicated to supporting all segments of our space program. In addition to monthly luncheons that educate our members on a particular topic, we have different guests every month. It gives folks in the Space Club a chance to network, get to know each other. The Space Club is committed to inspiring tomorrow's space workers as well, chiefly by sponsoring the a program where every fall, every sixth grader in Brevard County in the public schools gets to take a field trip to the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex. The kids get picked up by bus on KSC Visitor Complex buses from their school. They get the ride to the Visitor Complex, get to spend the day there doing some education activities, some scavenger hunts. They get to see the IMAX movie, hear a little speech, sometimes get to meet an astronaut, see a science demonstration, all of that. They get to go home, and when they go home, they get a coupon that allows them to come back another time. For free to see the visitor complex and share what they learned with their parents and the rest of the families. It's a great education program that really all of the fundraising efforts that the Space Club does throughout the year goes towards supporting that program. And of course, the other main thing that they do that the Space Club does is to recognize and honor the very best in our industry who have made significant contributions to the space program while working here in Florida. And that is the nature of our conversation today with the Lifetime Achievement Award winners. Again, the three gentlemen here joining us in the studio today. So when we come back from this break, we'll have a chance to talk to John and Tim and Warren. And we'll take your phone calls as well, 321-768-1240, or email at spacetalking@aol.com. Again, today's show brought to you by United Space Alliance. I'm Jim Banky, and you're listening to WMMB. We'll be right back.
And now back to Space Talk on WMMB.
And again, welcome back to Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. I'm Jim Banky. Our phone lines are open at 321-768-1240 for your calls. And then once again, the email address, spacetalking@AOL.com. Well, again, as we were talking, the National Space Club Florida Committee this week on Tuesday will hold its annual Lifetime Achievement Awards Luncheon. And my three guests in the studio today will each take their turn on the stage this week to accept their honors. Again, in the studio with me today, John Conway, Tim Hanrahan, and Warren Lackey. And again, we congratulations to all three of you. Thanks for being here. Let's start with John. And, you know, we don't have time really for all of you to detail every job and every program you've worked on. But if you would, let's start, John, again with you. Let's start with the top-level highlights and in general sense of the role that you played in the space program. How do you describe what you did and do for your friends and families?
Well, Jim, I don't know that that I described too much to them. I started to work for NASA right out of college. A recruiter from Langley Research Center came to the school and talked me into going up there, and with all kind of promises, I was going to make $6,300 a year and thought I'd be wealthy and live forever after. And I went up to Langley and worked in the computer area, went to graduate school while up there, and came back down to the Cape in Florida in 96.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, in 66, 3 years later, 3.5 years later.
Right.
It was even working then in the Apollo program up at Langley. They had hired 300 of us that year who were all going to work on the Apollo program. They'd hired 300 the year before. And they set about trying to make career NASA people out of us, sending mm-hmm. us to school, teaching us everything they could. And it was a great atmosphere and a great challenge. And everybody was excited about this business of going to the moon. So I came down the Cape because I was a native Floridian and knew some of the guys had transferred down here and worked down here in computers, working the op system on the large computers that provide some of the real-time ground data to the firing room during Apollo. Was a part of the team that developed a launch processing system for Shuttle.
Mm-hmm.
That turned out to be a success, and so I ended up managing the computers and the communications equipment here at the Cape for a number of years. Ended up in payload operations. It was called cargo at the time, and we changed the name to payloads because the customers didn't care for this cargo stuff.
That's right.
And so I worked in payload operations, and that was an exciting time because we got to work with the entire science community, both internationally and nationally. And we flew a lot of payloads and had a lot of success, had good days and bad days.
Yeah. Wasn't the payloads just the excuse the shuttle guys needed to fly? Wasn't that the old story?
Well, it was a little bit like that. I know the when I first got the job, Dick Smith had enough courage or mistake, who knows, to put me in the payloads job. And the first thing he said to me is, "You've got to do something about this payloads thing." Or you know, he said, "The customers hate the shuttle program."
Yeah,
they said they're treated like go get in the trunk of the car. We're going on a trip. We'll let you know when we leave.
Right,
and we'll let you know when you're going to get back. And he said, "You've got to go fix this problem." And so that's the first thing I worked, and I went and talked to a bunch of them. Went up to Washington, talked to folks up there, and called back, and I said, "We need to change the name of the organization for starters." So we changed it from cargo to payloads, because that was the name the customers preferred. And our entire team worked awfully hard to overcome that, and I believe we did overcome that.
Yeah, that's great. One quick question for you, John, before we move on. Now, in my hand here, I'm holding my palm trail here, and this is a full-blown computer. How big was the first computer you worked on?
Oh, I don't know. let's put it this way. An early shuttle, we took the entire second floor of the Launch Control Center for our computer equipment.
Let's see.
And back in Apollo, it was a equally fairly large computer room. Big computers.
Huge. John, well, thanks, Tim. Let's talk to you in a little bit here. Now, tell us a little bit about how you wound up here and what did you do?
Well, actually, I started out at White Sands back in 1951, when space was really a dream or a vision, that at those times rocketry and missiles were strictly being developed as weapons. And I static fired the Corporal rocket engine, doing acceptance testing for it, for a company that probably nobody ever knew was in the missile business, and that was Ryan Aeronautical.
Okay.
And the missile was built by Firestone Tire and Rubber.
Oh, my.
So after many years of static firing both Corporal and Redstone engines at White Sands, I was approached by the Remo Wooldridge Corporation to consider moving to Florida on the Atlas R&D program. And so we moved here in 1958. I worked Atlas Mechanical Systems and through the entire series of Atlas development. Ended up as the associate manager of the office as we closed out the Atlas E&F program. And then was invited to transfer to the Aerospace Corporation to be in charge of a new program that was being started at the Cape, and that was the Titan III. And mm-hmm. we innovated things by building the Integrate Transfer Launch System.
Okay.
And launched the first of Titan III's one day behind schedule back in the mid-1960s. Titan became a viable program. It evolved into the Titan Centaur program, and many other versions of Titan went from five segments to seven segments and became the workhorse of the Air Force on programs that such as Sailor Hotel Defense Support Program and many of the national security programs that flew from the Cape. We eventually branched out into Atlas Centaur and its spacecraft, as well as the Delta program and its spacecraft, when NASA ULO gave up the expendable launch vehicle programs and they were transferred to the Air Force. So tremendous variety of national security spacecraft, tremendous variety of other programs, including many of the NASA planetary programs that were launched on Titan. And I think it's a variety of programs that we had on the Air Force side of the house that really made life interesting.
Yeah, every rocket required a different look because of a different payload, is my understanding.
Sure. One thing I might add, that two of my early mentors were people that had been longtime cohorts of Dr. Robert Goddard. Mm. Charlie Manser worked with Goddard from the very beginning in Massachusetts down to Roswell, New Mexico. And Lowell Randall joined Manser and Goddard when they moved the operations to Roswell, New Mexico. Mm-hmm. He was fresh out of high school, and the cavitating Venturi system that was flown on all Titans was patented and designed by Lowell Randall.
And say real quickly, what does that do, the Venturi system?
It was a flow control system.
Prevent pogo, prevent...
No, actually for flow control, and control of mixture ratio.
And I want to ask you, and Warren, we're going to get to you. We may have to do it after the next break. But Tim, going back to the Titan, when you had the Titan III, I'm fascinated by the idea of adding these big, giant, solid rocket boosters. You know, I mean, we're kind of used to them now with Shuttle. We're certainly used to them with Titan IV, 34D, and all that. But at that time, was that a big deal? I mean, it must have been.
It was, because it was by far the largest expendable launch vehicle on its day, and strapping the two huge solid rocket motors onto the Titan, and above all, you know, stacking the Titan back in the vertical integration building, then mm-hmm. moving it down to the solid rocket motor assembly building, attaching the SRMs to it, and then making your way down to either pad 40 or 41, where the payloads were installed. The original concept was to install the payloads back in the vertical integration building. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, even though at the time of the design, the payload community agreed to that, they still wanted to be last in line when it came to being stacked on top of the launch vehicle itself. And so we did that at the pad.
A tradition more than an engineering necessity?
More engineering necessity, to be honest with you, because they required air conditioning, which could not be provided to them on the trip down to the pad, and a lot of other environmental protection, too. So that's why you saw the launch pads with their huge environmental shelters.
And of course, the ITL and this whole Titan III area that you talked about, it was a big deal in terms of the landscape of the Cape. I mean, Cape Canaveral has this look and has these hangars and has a skyline that is very, very unique in particular, mostly because of these Titan buildings.
You're right. And it was a unique concept, too, in that where NASA used the crawler for transport down to the launch pads, we used a railway system.
And did Kurt Diebus have anything to do with that, or any discussions in that in the early days?
Lots of discussions. In fact, originally the tracks, and they continue to be, were welded continuously all the way down to each one of the launch pads, 40 and 41.
That's amazing.
Because we thought that the clickety-click of a normal railroad track would cause problems. Actually, it never did.
And, of course, you never thought to use barge. Like, I know that was one of the early concepts for Saturn. And
right.
And one of the Titan choo-choo trains, by the way, on display at the Air Force Space Museum. So very cool. Gentlemen, we're up against our point here where we need to take our five-minute built-in hold so we can get everyone caught up on the latest news, weather, and sports. We'll be back more with our Lifetime Achievement Award winners. Warren's story coming next, plus your questions and comments, 321-768-1240, or via email at spacetalking@aol.com. Space Talk brought to you by United Space Alliance. I'm Jim Banky, and you're listening to WMMB.
Be here for the heroes in orange jumpsuits.
Be here to feed your curiosity.
Be here for the goosebumps.
Major goosebumps.
Be here for the eye-opening.
Jaw-dropping. Excitement.
Of exploring space.
Be here for a day of fun.
And a lifetime of inspiration.
Be here at Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex. Now through September 6th, Florida residents receive a free child admission with each paid adult. Restrictions apply. Download your coupon at kennedyspacecenter.com/Florida.
Now, back to our own mission specialist, Jim Banky.
And welcome back to our second half of Space Talk on WMMB, brought to you by United Space Alliance, innovation you can trust, performance you can count on. As always, we invite your phone calls today to the program, where you are welcome to bring up really anything you'd like to talk about our space program. We'll take the time to talk about it. Don't worry about whether it's on topic or not. We'd just love to hear from you. Dial 321-768-1240. Local AT&T wireless customers can dial star 1240, or if you prefer to communicate online, send us an email to spacetalking@aol.com. And during the week, by the way, you can stay in touch with Space Talk via Twitter at Space Talking, or visit the WMMB webpage to download a recording of today's show. Check out the Space Talk show page, or even learn how to sign up for a cruise from Port Canaveral in November, on which I and my wife will be on board to spend time with our WMMB listeners. All of that located at WMMBAM.com. Okay, quick update from outer space at the International Space Station. The spacewalkers are still outside. Doug Wheelock and Tracy Caldwell Dyson, they got some ammonia on their suits earlier during a swap out of a pump, which, by the way, they couldn't get off. The old pump's still on there. They had to forego, basically ran out of time because they had trouble with some lines. So it will require a second spacewalk to fix this problem. It is a problem. It is not a huge major problem, but it is a problem nevertheless that they're going to have to address. And so we'll keep an eye on that for you. But right now the two spacewalkers remain outside using the sun to bake off the ammonia that contaminated their spacesuits, and they'll be fine here very shortly. In the studio today, here on the ground in Melbourne, is John Conway, Tim Hanrahan, and Warren Lackey, three men who this week will be honored by the National Space Club Florida Committee with a Lifetime Achievement Award. And we were talking with each of the gentlemen about what was kind of the highlights of their career and what they were doing, what they were all about. We've heard from John and Tim and Warren. Let's hear from you now, sir. What can you tell us about what you did when you were growing up?
Well, that's a very interesting question. I'm still asking some of those questions myself, but I'm thinking that my space story probably began in high school when I was reading the news reports of the work that perhaps Tim was doing.
Really?
You know, literally. And but I came to Florida in 62 to be an airplane mechanic.
Okay.
When I grew up. And someplace along the way, I got distracted, got involved in aeronautical engineering at Embry-Riddle and down in Miami. Mm-hmm. And that led to, what do I do next? Well, maybe I'll go up to something called Brevard Engineering College in this place called Melbourne. And so this whole story is pretty deeply rooted, and I forget about that sometimes.
How the one thing led you to the other is kind of interesting.
Well, yeah. It is, and it all had that business of rocketry buried in there someplace. Mm-hmm. So I had the opportunity to get involved at Brevard Engineering College when it was, you know, trying to become Florida Institute of Technology. And mm-hmm. as such, they had a space technology degree program that seemed to fit something that I would be interested in and wanted to be involved with. So we had the opportunity to graduate with the first Bachelor of Science degree in Space Technology and from Brevard Engineering College, which that same week became Florida Institute of Technology. So I joined the workforce with NASA up at the Kennedy Space Center in 1966 and then continued on at FIT for a master's program. But during the Apollo program, but I hear Tim and John's stories, and it just reminds me of the influences that were going on all this time, the whole notion of the computers and all the magic mm-hmm. that it took to do this business is what maybe it attracted my interest.
Did you graduate from Embry-Riddle?
I did graduate from Embry-Riddle with an associate degree in aeronautical engineering.
Okay, so you took the 2 year, came up here, and finished.
Exactly.
Okay.
And most of the finish up here was a double E program. So my identity crisis goes all the way back to who knows when, because, you know, my double E, I'm a plumber, am I, a mechanical engineer? And my whole career at the agency was essentially full of that as well. So on Apollo, I was with the spacecraft propulsion group, and was deeply involved with the propellant loading system for the spacecraft, all the hypergolic work mm-hmm. for the command service module, and the ground equipment at the pad. So my notion has always been, you know, which way is the engine room? I'm interested in what's under the hood, if
okay.
you will.
Sure.
And frankly, I look back and the academically, the training that was provided in the space technology program, even, you know, back in 65, gave me a perspective into the systems that were becoming real at the time, the computer systems that John was involved with working with. So on Apollo, the propulsion work was very intense, very demanding. Schedule-wise, we really put out long shifts, as everybody does with this work. As the program concluded, I worked with the propulsion system, the attitude control system for the orbital workshop on Skylab, and then through the miracle of administration methods, overnight, I became a software engineer. That was the real magic.
That was the magic, wasn't it?
And on the project that John referred to, the launch processing system, Kennedy Space Center had the opportunity in preparing for shuttle to design from scratch much of the ground equipment, and in particular the launch control and ground computer system, mm-hmm. and that was a major design effort, and as a early adopter of some of that technology during Apollo, I was invited to join the staff on that work, and and sort of grew up with the program. When shuttle came to town, I went back into operations, test operations, and was involved at the integration console and the control room. And in particular, the ground launch sequencer software for shuttle launch. So much of the code that's still running out there was stuff we were putting together back in the early 90s.
And I wonder about that because, you know, my youngest son's a computer science major now. I just finished his first term at UCF. Straight A's, by the way, I might add. 4.0. We're so proud. You know, he's learning, he's teaching himself C++. You know, I mean, the latest, greatest, well, I don't know if it's the latest, greatest, but certainly it's what's being used. You know, can these modern guys, do they need to call you up and say, what's that code about? Why are those numbers there? Or do they still learn this stuff?
Well, this business about teaching yourself is, in my experience, it was all learned on the street. As it turns out, you know, if the technology you mentioned, pointed to that earlier with John's experience, the we used slide rules and Friedan calculators, mechanical calculators, for at the beginning of Apollo in computing the propellant loads on board the spacecraft. We'd do pressure tests, put the numbers, and compute these numbers with accuracies that mattered. Mm-hmm. And so slide rules would get it close, but we did have to use computational devices.
Wow.
A guy, this is a quick story of my first encounter with John Conway.
Okay.
And we'll
mute John's mic right
yes.
now.
Yes. a guy was a salesperson for something called time sharing. Gave a demonstration to our office, and the miracle he was showing us was, gee, you guys, you can write a program in a language that's pretty easy to understand at the time as BASIC, and type it into this teletype, and it's connected to a telephone, and it goes up to a computer in Atlanta, and the answer comes back, and it's in real time. And I thought about the struggle we were having with our computational work for the Apollo loading operation. So I said, how do you do this? What does it take? Well, it took all the administrative process of getting computer support, which one day brought me to John's office in walking the paperwork around to get all this approved. And this is very new stuff. It had never been used at Kennedy Space Center. So that's my first John Conway encounter story.
Oh boy! Well, we're running a little bit out of time here now. Let me go back to Tim real quick because we do have a question, Tim, from email, and I'm only going to ask this because the last name is suspiciously familiar. Sean writes, as chief missile polisher at the Cape, what brand of wax did you prefer to use?
WD-40.
Ah, that's a good answer. That's probably the right answer too, isn't it? WD-40, a miracle of developed for the Atlas, wasn't it originally, or missile work in general?
It was primarily used on the Atlas. I think the first uses on the missile were on Atlas. Why and where it was developed, I really don't know.
It's in everybody's garage, and they don't know it came from the missile program. John Conway, why did you go into the space program?
You know, that's a good question.
With about 45 seconds.
Well, I think I'm still trying to figure out what I want to be when I grow up. And I think the recruiter that came to the campus, started talking about all the exciting things they were going to do, started talking about going to the moon, started talking about how, you know, this was a national thing. And, it just seemed like the right plan. In fact, I had four job offers at the time. And I said, well, plus he was going to send me to graduate school. and I thought that was a real plus. So that was what sold me, and I've been sold ever since.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, look, we're going to pause here for our final break. And when we return, we'll have some final moments with our guests and your last chance to participate in the program at 321-768-1240. This is Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. I'm Jim Behnke. You're listening to WMMB.
Now, back to our own mission specialist, Jim Behnke.
And welcome back as we begin our final segment of today's edition of Space Talk, sponsored by United Space Alliance. With me in the studio, John Conway, Tim Hanrahan, and Warren Lackey, this year's winners of the Lifetime Achievement Award by the National Space Club Florida Committee. We had a question come in on the phone. Alan from Minneapolis, he's offline now, wanted to know, how did it feel to be involved? Tim, why don't you take that? How did it feel to be involved in the good old glory days of our space program?
It was fun. Never had such a great time in all my life. There were challenges galore and decisions to be made, but I think the enjoyment of what I always call the fire and the smoke and a successful launch just made it worthwhile coming back day after day.
Wow, that's great. And let's talk about the future then, speaking of the past. I mean, are you pleased, Tim, with, where we're headed? Are you concerned? What are each of your thoughts here as we wrap up about where we're headed in space? Tim.
Okay. Having grown up on the unmanned side of the house all the time, I think there are still tremendous things that can be done in space using unmanned rockets and robotic payloads and things like that. But despite saying all that, I'm still very supportive of the manned space program. And I do think there ought to be a future, and I do think that new research and development should be done, probably to convert some of the heavy lift rockets that we have right now to man rating, and then go back to a heavier lift rocket to do further exploration in space. And that's pretty good coming from an unmanned space guy.
That's awful generous, I think. Warren, what about you? Where do you think we ought to be going next?
Well, I'll take everything that Tim said.
Yeah.
And add that all answers are right when it comes to this work.
Mm-hmm.
I had 5 years of experience on an early commercial program after I left the agency, and the Kistler rocket program, which is a two-stage recoverable rocket idea.
Yeah.
And that, was a real culture shift for me. And I believe that the commercial initiatives that are maturing will continue to mature and will earn their position in supporting actually a world space program.
Mm-hmm.
And so I am very much encouraged by the commercial initiative, but I also believe that manned spaceflight and the work that we identify traditionally with astronauts should continue and will continue. So there's a false choice when we get into some of these discussions sometimes between one or the other, and truly the evidence is that the answer is both.
Yeah, it seems like there should be enough money to go around for everything that we want to do, and maybe that's not the case, and we come up with these difficult choices. John Conway, what do you think? Where should we be going next? With what hardware, and when do you want to go?
Well, I agree with both these gentlemen. I certainly agree with what Warren was saying, that there's a place for all of it, and there should be a place for all of it. And if you're ever going to make use of space to its potential, you're going to have to use all the means. The robotics is good. I think NASA can do more with Earth sciences. I think NASA could play a bigger role in energy solutions for the future, that given their project management skills. And so I would like to see all the above. I think right now the short-term thing is to get resolution on where NASA is going to go with this program, what they're going to do so they can get started. They're in a great state of limbo now, and we need to move past that as a country.
Yeah, and are people antsy? Do you think you talk to friends out there? Are we on pins and needles waiting to see what the decision will be?
I think they're concerned. I think they're looking for clear direction. I think it in a way it's not so much, as Warren kind of hinted, it's not so much important what the answer is that there is a plan, it is agreed to plan, and it has national support for what we're doing in space.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's absolutely key, and I want to be able to do it all too, and I just get so concerned about the money and that there's enough and that we're doing the right thing with the right budget, and I think we're going to get there. Well, anyway, gentlemen, again, thank you all for being with us today and talking with us, and congratulations each on being recognized by your peers with this kind of an honor, and I know this Tuesday's the launch. You're going to have a great time. And thanks again for all of you being here today. I appreciate it. Well, that's it for now. Let's wrap up here some talk with some what's going on. Take a look at some notes here. First of all, real quick on the spacewalk, the two spacewalkers are back inside the airlock right now and wrapping up the spacewalk. They're considered safe to get back in. But the work did not get done. Some of the finish up work that was planned for Wednesday will be used now to continue this pump replacement operation, and now a third spacewalk being considered, or at least being talked about, to be able to get all the work done. So NASA very interested in getting this piece of hardware replaced just as soon as possible and get it working. Because the cooling system's so critical to the station, just say real quick, the electronics on board the station give off heat, the astronauts give off heat, and that heat's got to go somewhere. And in space and in microgravity, heat doesn't want to go anywhere. It just want to sits there. And so you got to figure out a way to move that heat along and basically dump it into space. And these ammonia coolant lines certainly do that for the electronics and the equipment that's outside the space station. In this case, that's the cooling system we're talking about. So it's got to get done. And if it doesn't get done, if the problem doesn't get fixed, then you have to power down systems. And then that just defeats the purpose and gets in the way of good productivity on board the station. So it's all very important that it gets done. And my book, once again, shows the importance of getting as many spares up there as possible, because there was a spare there. They didn't have to wait for it. And that's all good. Well, all right, let's see. The Lifetime Achievement Award Luncheon, as we've been talking about, is this Tuesday at 11:30 a.m. at the Radisson Resort at the Port in Port Canaveral. If you're interested in attending the lunch or joining the National Space Club Florida Committee, you can do both of those things by visiting the club webpage. The address is www.nscfl. Those are the first letters of National Space Club Florida Committee, nscfl.com. Dues are only $25 a year. And they do go help toward the education programs with the kids that we mentioned earlier. The next launch from the Cape, now targeted for this Thursday, August 12th at 7:14 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. It's an Atlas V rocket carrying a new generation of military communications satellite into Earth orbit from Complex 41. If that launch stays on schedule, we will bring you the live coverage of the launch during the Bill Mix Show in the morning. So we ask that that you tune in and listen to that. Next week on Space Talk, my special guest will be former NASA Flight Director Wayne Hale, who retired from NASA just last weekend. Wayne has been on Space Talk before. He's certainly one of the finest men that I've had the privilege of working with and getting to know through the years involved with the space program, almost as good as John Conway. His departure from NASA is not good for the agency, in my opinion, and we will be anxious to hear from Wayne and tell us why he decided to leave and what his thoughts are about the future and the future of a space exploration. In the meantime, let's talk football, the NFL Pro Football Hall of Fame ceremony in Canton tonight. Preseason game between the Cowboys and Bengals tomorrow. My Vikings are at training camp. Brett Favre may or may not be retired, so life is good. I mean, can you just feel the fall in the air? Well, that's it for today. Thanks again for listening. Space Talk is sponsored by United Space Alliance and is a production of Milo Solutions. Aaron Michaels is my personal chief engineer. The Home Mortgage Law Show is next here on WMMB. I'm Jim Bankey, and we'll talk to you again real soon.